Good morning. It's probably not lost on you that you are a little more than a month away from April 15th, tax day. And for those of you who do your own taxes or have your taxes done for you, it's a day of dread, a day of concern for many. And some individuals don't pay their taxes or try to get away from it. They are a conscientious objector to taxes. I can't say that I'm not an objector to taxes, but I can't say that I'm a conscientious objector to taxes. They'll say that the government is corrupt. They say, I can't support a government that's corrupt. And I don't disagree that the government's corrupt. It persecutes Christians. Well, I don't disagree with that either. But Matthew 22, verses 15 and following, they remain the same regardless of the situation we're in. In Matthew chapter 22, starting in verse 15, it says, "Then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. And they sent to him," this being Jesus, "their disciples with the Herodians, saying, 'Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God in truth. Nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?'" And now Luke or Matthew has told us that their intention was to trap Jesus, to get a situation where Jesus was either against the government and they could take him to the governing authorities and have just cause for persecuting him, or that he would make the people of God, the Jews in this case, angry because he supported the tyrannical government that was over them. The Jews hated the Romans. The Jews hated being under the thumb of someone, and more importantly, probably than anything, they hated paying taxes. I can't imagine anyone really loves paying taxes, but the Jews really hated taxes. And it says in verse 18, "But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said," and I have to wonder if he would answer this differently if it was an honest person coming his way. If an individual came to Jesus and said, "Honestly, is it right to pay taxes? Is it appropriate to pay taxes?" But he, perceiving their wickedness, it says, verse 18, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money." So they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, "Whose image and inscription is this?" They said to him, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." When they had heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. The thing I find most interesting is that in just a few chapters here in the book of Matthew, Jesus would be tortured by the Roman government. He would be crucified, though on the backing of the Jews, by the Roman government. And Jesus at this point in Matthew chapter 22 has already told his disciples what things are going to take place. That he is on his way to Jerusalem, and that in Jerusalem he was going to be taken, he's going to be tried, and he's going to be crucified. If anyone could be a conscientious objector paying taxes, it would be Jesus. And yet, what does he say? Whose image is on the coin? Caesar's. Obvious question with an obvious answer. Caesar's image is on the coin. We live under Caesar's dominion. We appreciate, though not always, the benefits of living in such a place. I know you all enjoy driving on fairly well-maintained roads, though this winter has been kind of hard on some of them. And we love having school systems. I know I love sending my kids to school after a few days of snow days. So there are good things that the government provides. Is it corrupt? Perhaps. I wouldn't argue with you about that. Does it persecute the church? Yeah. Is it participating in it anyway and condoning it? Absolutely. But here's a few reasons why you should pay your taxes. And the first one and the last one seem to be the most important. Romans chapter 13, in verse 1, Paul's not going to make the argument you think he's making right away. Yeah, Paul makes a couple of arguments for paying taxes, and one of them is the one we just used. The government is not all bad. Some of the things the government does are absolutely wonderful and are only able to be done by the government because no individual or no group, small group of individuals, could do them. And in Rome, it was no different. The Roman government did a lot of great things for the community, did a lot of great things for the impoverished, helped individuals get out of the holes they were in, provided transportation in the form of roads, and good roads, roads that no one had ever seen before, in the sense of how amazing they were. And he says, let every soul, verse 1, be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Now, if you back up a second, Paul is a man who is not just, but will remain to be imprisoned by the Roman government. And if history, not biblical history, but if extra-biblical history is true, he will inevitably be killed by the Roman government at the end of 2 Timothy. He's an individual who understands that the government is not all good. There are quite a few opportunities for him, and he's nearly beaten by the Roman government. And he's not, in that sense, protected by the laws, because he ends up being stoned once, at least, and nearly stoned quite a few more times. And yet, he says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. Therefore, whoever, verse 2, resists the authority, resists the ordinances of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. This is a generality. It's not always true, but in general, you do good things, the government will leave you alone. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger, to execute wrath on him who practices evil. There's a purpose for the government. To execute wrath, he says, on those who practice evil. He says, therefore, verse 5, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. And I want you to think about that, because we're coming back in just a second. He says, for because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. That last one is kind of odd, because he's talking about not a reverence that you would give perhaps to God, but there is a level of honor that individuals are due. Respect, because of their position. When you travel and you have to pay, in this case he's talking about customs of the land, and when you have to pay a toll, that's a form of a custom or a tax. And he says, it is appropriate, verse 7, for you to pay what you are responsible for paying as a citizen of whatever government you are a part of. But verse 5 is kind of the key. Because he ultimately doesn't just leave it at, hey, the government does some good things, so you should pay them. What does he say there in verse 5? Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, not only because you're afraid of the government, but also for conscience' sake. We're only a week removed from last Sunday, and a lesson on honesty. A lesson on honesty. Maybe you pay your taxes, but you wheedle your way out of paying all the taxes. Now, I'm not against you using the law as the law is described. You taking the deductibles and you fulfilling your role in being a taxpayer. There are certain benefits to having children. My little deductions. But he's talking about here, more importantly than what the money does for the government and what it ultimately will provide for you, he's talking about you pay taxes because, not who they are, but who you are. You pay taxes and you pay your fair share, the wages that you are required, back in verse 7, render therefore to all their due, not because of who they are, but because of who you are. You pay your taxes. You pay your bills. You take care of those who are your responsibility, and you do it not because you have some external force making you, but because you are who you are. And so he makes that argument from conscience sake, that it is our responsibility to do so. And it doesn't matter what the government is doing in relation to it. It doesn't matter that it's going in the bureaucrats' pockets. It doesn't matter that you are conscientiously opposed to what the government is doing with it in military forces in other countries, and how arrogant they are in putting money into the impoverished areas of other countries while leaving this country destitute. Whatever the case might be, Jesus paid taxes. And there is no one who has more authority, who has more reason not to pay taxes than Jesus. And yet he paid them. Not because of who the government was, but because of who he was. Because of his honesty. Because of his conscience. The second aspect here we have, Titus chapter 2, in verse 7. So you have to remember that Paul, that the other first century writers, that the Christians of the first century, the individuals that he's communicating to, they did not want to pay taxes. Just like you probably do not want to pay taxes. Titus chapter 2 and verse 7. He says, "In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence," here's a big one, "incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you." And there is one opponent who should trump all of these. All the ones that are around you in the community, all the individuals who just look for something to nitpick you for. Who just look for something to say, "Oh, well, he's not that great of a Christian because he does this wrong." He says, don't give them place for that. Don't give them an opportunity to blame you for stuff. Don't give them opportunity to make you look bad if you can help it. Because they'll find things. They'll find things even that are good about you, that you're doing the right things. You're a Christian. And they'll pick on that. You can't help that. Don't give them more ammunition. Especially when we're talking about the one who is the accuser, the devil. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 27, among all the list of sins that Paul's telling them to give up, lying and evil speaking, and instead he says you should tell the truth, right? Speak the truth. He says there in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 27, give no place to the devil. And that doesn't mean leave a room. Don't leave a room open for him. He's saying don't give the devil a foothold. He's saying these sins that are a part of your life, get rid of them. Change them into virtues. Turn them into the good. Because those are opportunities for the devil. He says, the devil can leverage you. And so can the community. People in the community will try to leverage you. It's like getting in with a loan shark. Seems like a really good idea at first. And they'll give you the money that you need in order to get what you need done. But very shortly you find out that you're involved with things that you ought not be involved, and they use that against you. Well, you're involved with this person now. Well, you put this money into this place, or you got this money from an indecent place. And how's that going to look? So if you don't want this to get out, well, you've got to do something for me now. Now we see it when it comes to money. We don't see it, unfortunately, when it comes to the devil. Give no opportunity for the devil. Give him no place. Create that good report, that good influence. Be blameless, which is what he talks about in Philippians chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. And in fact, in Matthew chapter 17, and you can look into Ephesians 2, or Philippians 2, we're not going there right now. But Matthew 17, in verse 24, another opportunity to pay taxes, and Jesus doesn't say, "Well, no, I'm not paying those taxes because I'm conscientiously opposed to the government that's going to crucify me." But in fact, in Matthew chapter 17, in verse 24, he says, "When they had come to Capernaum, those who received the temple tax came to Peter and said, 'Does your teacher not pay the temple tax?'" This is a different kind of tax. This is a tax on the individuals who were part of the Jewish religion. He says, he said, yes, and when he had come into the house, Jesus anticipated him, saying, what do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take customs or taxes? From their sons or from strangers? Do the children of kings pay taxes, basically? The answer is obviously, no, they don't pay taxes. And that's what Peter answers, from strangers. And Jesus said, then the sons are free. Nevertheless, lest we offend them, go to the sea, cast in a hook, and take the fish that comes up first. And when you have opened its mouth, you will find a piece of money. Take that and give it to them for me and you. Now, that's probably the oddest way anyone's ever paid their taxes. You heard of stories of people paying in pennies? No one's ever talked about paying with a fish. And yet, Jesus says, lest we offend. It seems like Jesus is saying, because he's the Son of God, this temple tax is for the temple, we shouldn't have to pay this temple tax. Nevertheless, I'm going to pay it so that I don't cause problems. Basically, he says, it's just money. It's not worth the trouble. That's something we'll get to in just a second. He says it's not worth the trouble. We focus so much on these things that are part of life, and we make them idols. You say, well, tax is not my idol. It is if you spend so much time worrying about it and concerning yourself over it and trying to find every little loophole you can find in order to do that, and then disregard what God is telling you to do otherwise. So we spend so much time on that we don't do what God is telling us to do. He says, we need to pay this tax, not because it's necessarily right to pay this tax, but because it's expedient to pay this tax, so that we don't offend. So we've got honesty, and for conscience sake, because of who you are, you should pay your taxes. You should be honest with your taxes as well, which is another point to make, so that you can remain that good rapport with the community. Because if you don't pay your taxes and you don't pay your fair share, what's going to happen? Somebody in the community is going to get a hold of that information, and they're going to say, well, this individual doesn't pay their taxes, and that's going to be a black mark against you, whether it's legally a black mark or spiritually a black mark or not. It's something that you can avoid simply by paying taxes. So pay taxes. And the last aspect here is something we just got into. You remember what Jesus said there in Matthew chapter 22. He said, you see this coin? Whose face is on it? And they said, it's Caesar's face. And Jesus answers, then render to Caesar that which is Caesar, and to God that which is God. What's Jesus saying? He's saying equal distribution of your wealth. No, he's saying half of it belongs to Caesar and half of it belongs to God. Or he's not saying the amount that you give to Caesar, give the same amount to God. That's not what he's saying at all. In fact, he's saying, just pay your taxes so you can get back to serving God. Just pay it. Because ultimately, what belongs to God? Psalm chapter 50 and verse 10. Every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. Basically saying, everything is mine. Everything is mine. Everything belongs to God. In Psalm 3 and verse 8. Salvation belongs to the Lord. It's His mercy that comes upon us. That's why it's a gift. It doesn't belong to us. Salvation is not mine. Salvation belongs to God, and He gives it to us. Psalm 62, verses 11 and 12. Power belongs to the Lord, and mercy is His to distribute. The most important things in life belong to God. And even the unimportant things, like the beast in the forest. That squirrel? That's God's squirrel! The big things and the small things, they belong to God. But what else? Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 through 20, or 14 through 30, in fact, is the parable of the talents. What else belongs to God? Our resources! The goods that we possess, the time that we possess, the abilities that we possess, they all belong to God. And they need to be used for God's purposes. But we're too busy worrying about our taxes. Quit worrying about your taxes. Get your taxes done, pay your taxes, and get on serving God. Do not make taxes an idol. Because ultimately, when you make taxes an idol, you're making money an idol. Because that's what you're concerned with. You don't want to pay any more than you absolutely have to, and there's a place for that. But there's a point where you just got to get on. Just move on. Because what else belongs to God? Not just our time and our talents and our treasure. Not just salvation and the cattle on 1,000 hills, plus one or two or three, every hill. But Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. Paul says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your... And I love this. The King James Version is spiritual. The New King James Version, he uses the word reasonable. And really, the Greek word could go either way, which is odd. This is your service to God, whether it's reasonable or spiritual. You can't get around the fact that this is something that belongs to God. Your living sacrifice. There are more important things than worrying about taxes. And while taxes was our springboard, because it's nearly April 15th, I'll remind you again. Taxes aren't the point of this lesson, and I hope you get that. Merely a springboard to make the point the Bible is making, and makes all the time. There are more important things than taxes. And you could fill that blank in with taxes. You could fill it with anything. There are more important things than automobiles. There are more important things than housing. There are more important things than food. There are more important things than clothing. There are more important things than... Whoa, hang on a second. Family. Whoa, hang on a second. Yeah, I said it. So did Jesus. The most important thing is your living sacrifice to God. So quit getting distracted with these pointless things and get to it. And if it's time for you to sacrifice your life to God, Galatians chapter 3, verse 27, that you can be washed and redeemed. You can get into Christ by putting Christ on in baptism. You can become that new creature, that new creation, Romans chapter 6, verse 4. You can become someone new, someone different than who you used to be. And you can put your priorities in order, and you can be about the things that God wants you to be about. Maybe you've lost sight of that. And maybe it's because of taxes, because they drive you nuts. But they don't have to. Just pay them. And move on to things that really matter. To laying up our treasures in heaven, not on earth. Because our bank account being slightly fatter isn't going to make a huge difference in the eternity. Actually, it's going to make zero difference in the eternity. But what will is our service to God, is our commitment to Him, and the works that we work here on earth, the treasures that we lay up in heaven, where moth and rust cannot destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Because where our treasure is, there our heart will be also. And that's what we've got to be about. We've got to be people who are about getting to the real things, getting to the things that are really important. And if you lost sight of that, we can help. We can help you put those priorities in order to begin with, or get back to the priorities that really matter, whatever you need. I pray that you'd come while we stand and while we sing.